What is going on, guys? We are in the zone. This is episode 202 today. And today, Alino, we got a massive, massive introduction to the show because the World Cup finale is tomorrow. And we know the narrative. We got a hero in Lionel Messi. Some people call him the villain because of the amount of penalties he's taken. And then on the other side, we got a young 23-year-old that already has a World Cup looking to win back-to-back. First player since Brazilian Ronaldo to do it. Alino, this tournament has been an absolute roller coaster. There's been a lot of upsets. But in this case, we get two big, big matchups here. We got Argentina, who's a powerhouse. We got France, who's a powerhouse. Who do you see winning this? If you had to project the score, what is it? And who do you think is going to be the MVP in the game?
Yeah, there's a lot here because Mbappe, Messi, two teammates are at PSG. Looks like Mbappe never wanted to be teammates to begin with because as soon as he came, he wanted to dip out the door. So you got him, Neymar, Messi, three massive egos together. And Mbappe wants to prove that he's the guy here. I think all the whole narrative around the World Cup has been around Messi ever since they got through the knockout stage. And I think Mbappe feels a little slighted. He took it personally a little bit. And I think he's going to make his teammate pay for it. I think he wants to end his World Cup dream because he's cold-blooded like that. And I think it's been well documented that he's been a Cristiano Ronaldo fan his whole life. So just to add even more salt into it, I'm going to watch like how Mbappe plays in this moment. A lot of bragging rights here, like Brazilian Ronaldo when he went back-to-back. He won two out of the three, so... 94, he was on the bench. I don't think he played that year in the World Cup, and then he wins it in 02. So Mbappe has an opportunity here to be the guy in back-to-back World Cups. I think that just adds to his legacy and puts him in that discussion of like one of the greatest of all time at this age of his career. So I got France winning this. I'm going to go 2-1. I think Mbappe gets on the board, and I think they park the bus after Messi gets a penalty kick.
Yeah, I like that too. I think, you know, I love the narrative with Argentina. I think they've been so close for so many years. You look back at 2014 when they lost to Mario Götze in the 118th minute. Great strike from him. It goes in the back of the net. And we all knew the narrative in that World Cup where Germany was just this team on a mission. They absolutely knocked Brazil just off the rails, winning 7-1 in Brazil. They were poised to win that World Cup, in my opinion. Neuer was the best goalie at the time. Thomas Müller was just – he was basically doing what Mbappe's doing now. He was scoring every other international game. I like this game a lot. I'm really intrigued with the matchup. I did want to see Argentina versus England. I think that would have been a little more intriguing just because both teams haven't been remotely close to winning in a long time, but – you know, France is just that powerhouse. They have a lot of superstars that are out and they're still in the final. That shows how special this team is. Mbappe, man, that guy is a demon. I think this is the best player in the world right now. You could call that a hot take or not. The guy is just the absolute animal on the outside. You have guys like Rabiot. You have guys like Duchemi and all those other guys in the mid that could just lob it out on the wings. And you have Dembele and Mbappe, man, that have that pace that I don't know if Argentina could really handle. I know they have Lautaro Martinez. They have a couple guys that can really, you know, move the pill and really run. But I think if Argentina wins this game, Alino, I hate to say it, Messi gets another penalty, and then it's just a 1-0 game, and they play aggressive. But I like what you're saying there. I think if this score ends up being 2-1, I think it's in favor of France. I think they have more firepower. But I do think the best play here, if you are on the sports books, you take Mbappe and you take Messi to score in a parlay. I think that's at plus 400. I'm doing that, no doubt about it.
Yeah, because that's like something where they both could score. Like, I know Mbappe was covered a lot against England, but that's our whole game plan. That's the only way they were going to stop him. Like, Walker was there. He's the only guy remotely close to even catching him. He was even leaving him in his dust that time, so... I don't know, on Argentina, how the hell do you like stop a guy like Mbappe running full speed down the wing? Like, there's probably Walker, Alphonso Davies. Those are the only two I can really think of at the top of my head that could even try to catch him. So Argentina's back line's in for a fun night, let's just say.
Yeah, like they got a couple guys that like are okay. Like Otamendi to me is a guy like he's going to use his aggressive play to stop him. But like you said, with pace, I don't see anybody on Argentina catching up with him. So I think in order for them to win, they got to probably have five back, like as late as the 55th minute if they really want to win this game. You know, here's the thing, Alino. I know we all love, you know, the older guys in the tournaments. How much of a factor, let's say it's 0-0, 55th minute, how much of a factor does a guy like Angel Di Maria have if he comes on in this game?
I think he could have a big role here. It's just what time of the game are you going to put him in, and are you going to put too much pressure on him? And another important thing, like, is he going to be the scapegoat if this goes sour? Because like we see in basketball all the time, LeBron, when he doesn't win, who's the scapegoat on the team? They brought in Russell Westbrook. Everybody thought that was just to make this a super team. Like, no, Russell Westbrook was brought in to be a scapegoat when this eventually, like, most likely goes downhill. So if Di Maria comes in and they lose a game, they'll probably try to spin it. They're not going to blame their greatest player, one of the greatest players to ever put that jersey on for them. They'll probably blame a Di Maria, or Dybala comes in and they'll blame him. So they got a scapegoat coming in at some point in this game in case they lose this game.
You know, Alino, we've talked about the big guys here. A lot of underrated players, I think, in this game. Who stands out to you the most? Because we saw the last World Cup final. I thought Antoine Griezmann was sensational. He's been sensational in this World Cup. He's 31 years of age. Do you think Griezmann is more of an X factor, or do you think it's still that pinnacle striker in Olivier Giroud?
Yeah, like I wouldn't have expected Giroud to even really play that much in this World Cup. I don't know if he was even on their plans to be on the team because of, you know, like how old he is and who they had there before. But Benzema goes down and he gets this opportunity to come in and play valuable minutes. And he's actually been more of a game breaker than Griezmann to me. So I think Giroud right now, he's been important. He's played his role. He doesn't have to be Mbappe. He doesn't have to be like Lloris and Net. He just has to be himself out there. And I think it's benefited him. He can just play his game. He doesn't have to do too much. So I think Giroud, sneaky scorer here, could be the guy that puts him over the hump at the end. He can score that late goal. Good, solid vet. So I think Giroud more than Griezmann, but Griezmann, I think you're going to have to rely on to be that guy. That other than Mbappe, he's going to get the ball and he has to do something to get him another look in the offense.
So, Alino, your final prediction is France 2-1. I think I might have to just agree with you there because I know the narrative has been based so much on Messi. There's just one guy I think that could dethrone him, and I think it's Mbappe. So I'm going to go with France to win back-to-back World Cups and Messi to just be in tears, man. I think this might be like one of the most heartbreaking losses. If they lose, it could be one of the most heartbreaking losses in FIFA history.
You know the narrative that they're bringing up about Messi reminds me of 2006 when they were pumping up Zidane in his last World Cup. Will he get his second World Cup and retire? The narrative was pushed so much, and we all saw how that played out in his last game. He did a headbutt the moment got to him. Can you imagine if Messi just loses at one point? Uncharacteristic move. He looks at Mbappe, and Mbappe probably says something stupid to him that he knows will piss him off, and just does a headbutt, gets a red card, walks off the field.
I would love to see, like, Upamecano, because Upamecano has been having the worst tackle. He takes the worst tackles. We saw in the England game, saw in the Morocco game. The guy gets beaten. He just slide tackles you. I could see, Alino, if there's one guy that will piss Messi off, I think Upamecano does like a bad slide. And then on the next play, you see Messi cleat him in the leg, get a red card, get out of the game. But, hey, you know what? We all know that Argentina, come the 18-yard box, they're going to be flopping like fishes because Theo Hernandez and Upamecano are big guys, and we saw against England, they body check. We saw he just literally body check Mount in the 18. I think, you know, you have a young guy like Alvarez and Messi in the box, they're going to be flopping. So I do think there's a penalty kick for sure, like there was in 06. I think it's going to be a very entertaining game, but I got to go with France, man. I think they're the better team here. But now we got to move on. We're going to quickly go now to NHL, look at the lines for today. Dude, this is an absolutely jam-packed day for hockey. It's going to be insane, in my opinion. I think the first game we have here, Alino, we got the Bruins and the Blue Jackets. Like, this is as easy as it gets, in my opinion. You look at everything that the Bruins have been able to do at home. Everything. They are one of the best teams at home. But look at the money line. 420. I don't think anybody is going to take that. For me, I'm going to take the Blue Jackets at +2.5. That, to me, is just a safe bet. Like, they got Goudreau and Laine in the lineup. I don't see them losing by 3. I know the Bruins are a really good team at home, but I don't see them peppering Columbus in this one.
Yeah, I think this is a trap game for Boston. I think they're probably looking at Columbus's record, and obviously, like, they're not doing that great right now. But if Goudreau and Laine get hot here, this could be one of those games where they can surprise Boston. It won't be like a blowout, I think, but like a 3-1 type of scenario, get an empty net at the end. Boston maybe has some urgency in the third, but I think Columbus, this would be a safe one to maybe take a risk right now.
Yeah, man. And then we got the next game. We got Ottawa taking on Detroit. And, you know, the Sens have won 7 of their last 10 games. The Red Wings are just not looking like the team as advertised early on in the year. Sider's been struggling to really produce that in the same way he did last year. What do you like here, Alino? Do you like the over 6, or would you just be safe and take and pick a side in this game? Because both teams are pretty evenly matched, but I just think Ottawa's been the better team recently.
Yeah, I think I might actually, right at over 6 right now, I would take that. If it gets to 7, like depending on how the line moves, maybe not. But right now, I'd feel comfortable at 6 just because Detroit, I think Steve Yzerman must have had a chat with the coaching staff and the group, like, hey, you're going off course here. What the hell are you doing winning games? Like, slow down here.
We need Bedard.
Yeah, we're trying to get Bedard, and you're messing up all those plans. So I think they had a nice chat, a productive meeting there with the coaching staff, and they're back on track there to go down to the standings. And I think Ottawa's going to take advantage. Ottawa, I think, needs results here because they have to turn this around and at least make their fan base happy that this is going in the right direction. There's talks of their ownership group putting some more excitement in the market. So I think right now Ottawa, it's on them. I think they win this, but I would not be surprised if this goes like 4-3, 5-2 kind of win for Ottawa.
Yeah, the next game we got is just one-sided as it gets. Anaheim and Edmonton, I mean, whatever the prop is for McDavid in this game, I'm probably going to take it, whether it's over 1.5 points, a power play point. I'm taking that. I think that's a given here. But I really do like the under 6.5 at +112. We saw Anaheim, man, like they can't score to save their lives. This is a team that is just desperately trying to get Bedard. They have 2 regulation wins in the year, Alino. It's almost Christmas. That is just... I can't even fathom that. Yes, Edmonton struggles sometimes with their goaltending, but I think in this case, I think let's say they go up 3-0, I don't see them absolutely purposely trying to blow out Anaheim. I think this is a feel bad type spot for Edmonton. I think I could see this being a 4-1 game, I would go with under 6.5 at plus money. I just think Anaheim they can't score at all.
Yeah, I agree. I like the under. I think that's a safe one. And even the puck line could be depending on how low the scoring is. But I do see Edmonton. It's like 2 goals. I think that's doable here. I think it'll be a comfortable win for them. And Anaheim continues to do what they do. And if I'm John Gibson, like, I'm looking around. I'm trying to see where would be a landing spot, because this cap obviously won't do him any favors. But I think he needs to start looking, like, get out of that situation. Like, he's not going to win, it looks like, for a while. And by the time they even start winning games, he might be like at the end of his prime. So I think right now he should be looking at other options.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Like, the guy could have been a Leaf, and he's like, nah, I'm good. Don't want to be a Leaf. All right, man, just stay in Anaheim then. Just be in the basement for your whole career. No, I'm just kidding. Like, I'll give Anaheim a couple of years. They got Zegras, they got McTavish, they got Drysdale. They got some good pieces there, and if they get Bedard with Zegras, holy crap, that's just ubering with talent right there. But the next game we got, man, this to me is going to be almost like a playoff game. Dallas and Carolina. Dallas, to me, has been one of the more pleasant surprises. We see Jamie Benn having a renaissance of a year. Jason Robertson looks like a Hart Trophy candidate. But then you look at Carolina, they've started to roll. Peter Kochkov, I can't believe I'm saying this, Alino. I just picked him up in fantasy. I think he might be the starting goalie moving forward for Carolina. Like, Freddie Anderson, I have no idea where he is. He's been injured the last, like, two years, basically, off and on. And what do you like here? Because I'm looking – I was going to take the under six when it was at six. It's now at 5.5. I don't like that. So I think, dude, I'm just looking at value. I might have to take Dallas here at plus money on a money line.
Yeah, I think I would stay away from this one. Like, if I was like, just on all the games, I think this is the one that could go either way. It could be a coin flip. Carolina's a really solid team. Like, every position, just the way they play, they all fit well together. The only thing I would do for this game is maybe Robertson to score. That would be one prop I would look at. But in terms of the score, like, I wouldn't feel confident with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we got the Rangers and the Flyers. Wow, the Flyers, man, just like the Ducks. Just watch. I had to watch the game the other night, man. I got an Android box so I could watch, like, any game, which is, like, my dream. I love it. But I watched the Philly game the other night against Arizona. Pretty entertaining game. Went to overtime in Mullet Arena. But, man, Philly, like, I feel bad for Tortorella. He goes to that situation. He probably thought it would be a lot better. JVR, honestly, in that game was their best player. And if JVR in 2022 is your best player, that's not good. So I think Philly here, just not a good hockey team. I would take the over 5.5. I know it's at minus 130, but I wouldn't pick a side just because the Rangers are so hot and cold. And you really don't know with the Rangers. So I see some people saying it could go under 5.5 just based off of the physical rivalry these two have. But I think when the Rangers' power play is rolling, Alino, one of the best in the league.
Yeah, I like it. I think they've been good all year in terms of, like, consistency. Philly, they're struggling. They can have a few wins here and there, but I think this is going to be a year where they're looking at not making the playoffs. They're just trying to stay in the mix there for Bedard, get another top pick. And I think next year is where they're going to ramp up who they feel can work under Tortorella. So I like the Rangers in this.
I like it. We got Tampa, Montreal. To me, I like the puck line with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think Tampa Bay is starting to kind of come back into form. And we see Montreal at the beginning of the year, you know, they looked like a really good, good team. I mean, we saw the guy that was, I can't say his last name. I think it's like Ziach or something. The guy that worked at Costco and is now on Montreal, and he's beating people up. Like, that guy looked phenomenal at the beginning of the year. Mike Hoffman and Sean Monahan looked really good at the beginning of the year, but now we're starting to see Montreal and exactly who they are. And I think they're still a bottom 10 team in the league. Cole Caulfield and Suzuki are phenomenal players, and dude, they stole Kirby Dach. Give that guy another year, I think he's going to be an absolute problem. But when there are rumors out there, Alino, that you're going to trade Josh Anderson, you know what your status is. And their status is not making the playoffs. I think Tampa Bay here on the puck line, to me, is the play, minus 105. And if you really like a prop, this guy has been getting hated on the last couple of years just because of some injuries. But Braden Point to score, I think, is a good play here as well against Montreal.
Yeah, I like the Braden Point pick. And I do like Tampa as a puck line. I think this is going to be another one of those games that we're seeing today that is a comfortable one. They're going to cruise, I think. I don't see Montreal causing too much problems. And even Kucherov getting a point, I think, at this point is pretty safe. So Kucherov, point, and puck line, Tampa.
I love that. And then we got the Leafs and the Caps, man. We saw a couple nights ago, Ovi make history. He hit 800 goals. We know how Ovi is against the Leafs, Alino. Are you taking an Ovi goal tonight? Because I think I am.
I am. Ovi scoring a goal is a pretty safe bet, especially when he plays the Leafs. For whatever reason, he just loves to play against them. And he's had a lot of big games against the Leafs in the past, and I think tonight will be no different. I do see the Leafs still winning, though, just because of where Washington is and just their consistency hasn't been there all year. But the other big one is Marner. Like, I saw that super boost there of Marner to get 2 points, Ovi a goal. I don't know about, like, he is coming off, like, that streak being snapped, and you don't know if he can go cold for one or two games before he starts getting some points again. So I would stay away from that little boost, but I would go Ovi scoring.
Hey, man, you know what? On FanDuel, you get Ovi to score. It's at plus 112. And like you said, you see the Leafs winning. I would take them in regulation at plus 114. So either way, that's plus money, Alino. I think we're rolling there with this Leafs and Caps game. Probably going to have to put a parlay together later, and I'll send it to you. But then we got, of course, I don't know with this team. I know I'm a big Devil fan. You know I am. But they're looking a little rough the last couple games. And I think Florida with Matt Tkachuk, this is a guy that could torch you any given night. I would take the over 6.5 goals. Again, today I guess is a total type of day. I'm not really taking a lot of sides, but again, if I'm picking a side, I might have to lean Florida just because of how great Matt Tkachuk has been. And Vanacek is looking a little sluggish right now on New Jersey.
I think New Jersey, it was a nice story when they started getting the wins again. Looked like they turned back the clock. It looked like everything was going well, but I think they're running into a team like Florida. They're on a mission here. They are trying to get out of that shadow of the Tampa Bay Lightning there in that state, and I think this is going to be helping them now. Like Barkov fully healthy again. I'm comfortable with Florida winning this game.
Plus money, too. That's a good one, man. And then we got the Sabres. Oh, my God. Sabres and the Coyotes. Okay. Where's Tage Thompson point? Give me his points. Give me Rasmus Dahlin to score and just Buffalo to kill them. Because Buffalo, Alino, I hate to say this because we're Leaf fans, they're a top five offensive team in the league this year. And I can't believe I'm saying it. Tage Thompson, Dahlin, Skinner, Tuck, all over a point a game, man. Like, what do you think about this Buffalo Sabres team? Because to me, might be the surprise of the season so far.
Yeah, I agree. They all, for the most part, their offense, like Skinner, it's good that he hasn't got concussed, thank God, at this point of the year. But Tage Thompson is he's something special there. I like the way he plays, and he's really come out of nowhere because he's had to, like, fill that void from Jack Eichel, which is not really easy to do. And him and Tuck and Skinner, collective unit, have been a nice story. Arizona, they got to get that arena taken care of. They got to figure stuff out there. Mullet Arena, there's fights going on in there, like people getting bit, beers getting thrown. Like, it's a fucking mess over there. Like, they got to change something. Like, it's not a good look when you got – it doesn't help that it's only 5,000 seats, so it probably could get caught on TV if there's something going on in the stands because it's only one bowl.
The so lower bowl. Yeah.
They got to fix that. But I got Buffalo winning pretty quickly. Scoring in the first period, and then after taking the two periods after that off, I think after the first period, this is pretty much over.
Would you take – so I'm looking here at the first period puck line for the Sabres at minus a half is plus 130. So I think that's the play, right, for them to be up by one after one? I think I'm taking that at plus 130. No doubt about that. But then, of course, we got to keep it rolling, Alina. We got four more games here to quickly discuss. We got the Preds and the Avalanche. The Avalanche we see are decimated with injuries, which is – so unfortunate. Landeskog is out another month. MacKinnon is out another couple weeks. Do you still think Colorado at this price is worth it? Because I really don't think so. I think you have Saros on the other side of things, who is the better goalie, in my opinion. Roman Josi is a defenseman that can shut down almost anybody any night. And you look at their top line, their only big threats are Nichushkin and Rantanen at this point. Do you take Nashville here, or do you stay away from this game just looking at the value here?
Yeah, just looking at the value, like with all the other games that you could like get some plus money on, I would stay away from Nashville, Colorado, just because there's so much uncertainty with just the goaltending, and like you don't know what you're going to get out of Colorado right now. So if there's a game, I would stay away from this one for sure, and probably stay away from that Jersey one. But other than that, I think the other ones have been pretty good with some forwards getting you value there.
Yeah, I think this game is, to me, is a wash in terms of betting. I don't know really what to expect here. Maybe, hey, Elie, you know, maybe we can go with a Matt Duchene prop revenge game going back to Colorado. I think that would be pretty funny. So maybe that's one guy I would circle. But other than that, we got the Islanders and the Vegas Golden Knights. The Islanders just killed me last night. Had them to win in regulation against Arizona. They lose 5-4. So I'm going to be very petty here. I'm going to go with Vegas here on the puck line. I'm just kidding. I'm going to go with the over 6 goals. They're without Adam Pellick, the Islanders. And we saw last night that their defense just does not look good. They're on a back-to-back. Vegas is rested. I think I'm going to go with the Alino favorite thing that you always love to do is a Phil Kessel goal. I see that happening tonight, or maybe I'll go with a Jack Eichel power play point, but I got Vegas winning this, I think, with going up against a tired Islander team.
Yeah, I think the back-to-back is going to help Vegas here. I know the travel is probably not crazy. Like, it's Arizona to Vegas, so it's not too crazy, but you still got to factor that in. They're playing hard one night. It was a back-and-forth game for the most part, and I think Vegas catch them here. With Phil Kessel, I think you can't go wrong. Like, if you're just risking it, it's good value if he scores, because he's not like that 40 goal scorer anymore, which is sad. But if he's getting a goal here and there, it's going to get you some value. So I would risk it against the Islanders. It's a team
with Varlamov in net tonight, too.
Especially with him in net, I would actually go with Phil. I think it's a team that he would match up well against, and I think he's going to get one in tonight.
I love it. And then we got, to me, I'm circling this over 9 times out of 10. I know it's favorite to go under, but Jets in Vancouver. There's just so many weapons on the ice, man. You got Bo Horvat, you got Miller, you got Besser on one end. You got Connor Scheifele and Ehlers on the other end. And even Cole Perfetti is starting to really become a great hockey player. I got to go with the over here. I just don't see a side here. I think it's very even. I know the Jets have been phenomenal recently. Connor Hellebuyck is looking like a Vezina type goalie, but if there is a team that can get 3 goals like against Connor Hellebuyck, I think it might be Vancouver, specifically at home. We saw the other night, Alino against Calgary, they had 2 goals in the first 3 minutes. So I like the over here. I think Vancouver and Winnipeg, very, very good underrated offensive teams.
Yeah, I think both of them right now. Bo Horvat, everyone's circling him and his contract. He's the rental everyone's going to be chasing after in the new year. So they're all going to be watching the way he plays. I think he continues it. I think he's close to, or probably is at 20 goals right now. But this is a guy I think that could help a team go on a long Stanley Cup run there. And he could also choose to go back to Vancouver. Who knows? Maybe in the offseason he wants to go back. But I think what he's been able to do has been impressive on a bad team. And Winnipeg with Hellebuyck, that's another nice story. So this one's a toss-up, but I think Vancouver is going to get a win tonight.
Yeah, I really don't know which side here. I think if maybe Vancouver, just based because, again, they're the underdogs in this one and they're at home. But I just think Winnipeg is just that team I wouldn't go against at the moment. But then we have our last game, Alino. This is going all the way back to the CNGA sports days, when we always used to talk about the Kings and the Sharks. This, to me, has been a rivalry that I've just absolutely adored to watch every time I watch it. I'm going San Jose here. I'm going Erik Karlsson point. I'm going with Logan Couture point. I think the Sharks win this game. I just don't see the Kings having that offensive firepower, or you just go with the over 6 goals, because you look at the goaltending on both sides. You got an aging James Reimer, and you have an aging Jonathan Quick. This isn't 2014. I'll probably go over 6 and the Sharks to win.
You know what? I'm feeling a little risky in this one. James Reimer, shutout tonight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. Let's see what that value is, because that would just be like a home run. James Reimer shutout plus 1,500.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
San Jose to win, and then James Reimer shutout.
That's freaking awesome.
Put a dollar on that one.
Put a dollar to win 16, whatever. We'll see what happens. But hey, now we got to move on to WWE quickly. Just want to quickly talk about it before we both got to get going. Last night's SmackDown, man, was just so eventful, wasn't it? We saw LA Knight. We saw another new character that we haven't seen. And, you know, Uncle Howdy, giving him the little hat, the hat bow. Alino, let's be honest here. Is it Bo Dallas?
I think so. I think it's Bo Dallas. And I think, like, it's nice that they've been, like, progressing it, making it a slow burn, but... You know what? At this point, the rate they're going, this thing's not going to be revealed until next Survivor Series. So if they can speed it up just a little bit, just maybe introduce someone else to the fold, like an Eric Rowan, get this guy some work. That would be nice. You could continue the Uncle Howdy thing up until WrestleMania, but that's the only problem I have with it. Like, I like the slow build, but it's a little too slow. Like, we're not building a fucking Marvel Universe Avengers movie. Let's ramp it up a little bit and get it to WrestleMania. But Uncle Howdy every week just causing a stir, a ruckus there. It's about time he shows himself. And LA Knight just got the hell out of there. I don't blame him.
I love LA Knight. I love what they're doing with him, his character development. Trying to hone and see if he's going to get over as a face. We saw his promo. It was incredible, man. I loved his promo. But I got to ask you now, we got to kind of turn the page. Like, Bray Wyatt has been back since what? October? And we haven't really seen him do much. Is this... Do you think this is a cause for concern, Alino, come WrestleMania? Like, you have a big match with him, and maybe he doesn't deliver just because of the in-ring work? Because I'm getting a little worried. He hasn't really done much in the ring. He was off for, what, a year, like, with The Fiend, too? So what do you think they're planning here with Bray? Do you think he's just – this is going to be a guy where it's not about the match quality, it's more about the character? Or do you think they're just really trying to find that perfect opponent for him because – To me, it's been way too long.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think LA Knight is the guy. It's just, what are they going to do? Like, are they going to have this go on until WrestleMania, and then that's when they finally reveal who else is with Bray? Or is this going to be at Royal Rumble, which I think they should do? Like, LA Knight, you can't have him do this until WrestleMania, and he doesn't have anything to gain from it because he just... really reinvented his character with that whole male model or whatever the hell it was called. And then he went back to LA Knight and just been killing it every week. So I think he has to be somewhere in the Intercontinental title scene and be involved there. But Bray, I would like this to be at Royal Rumble and they move on from LA Knight and go on with another program for him.
And we talked a lot, Alino, about last week, specifically about Rumble winners. We talked about Sami Zayn. We talked about The Rock. We talked about Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens. Do you think there could be a swerve here where we see maybe Bray Wyatt win the Royal Rumble? Because we've seen time and time again that Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt have that feud that I think really does boost production in WWE. You have a character like Bray Wyatt right now going up against the Bloodline. Do you think this is something that they would go with, or do you think they're just so honed in there with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn that this is going to have to wait till maybe next WrestleMania? Because we did see on SmackDown that there is another narrative now added to the Bloodline that I think is very intriguing.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something where Bray, maybe next WrestleMania, is going for the title. Like, I think this is how slow of a burn that they're really going to go at, because if he's going until Royal Rumble with LA Knight, and this has been going on since probably the start of November, I wouldn't be surprised if at WrestleMania it's another slow build. Maybe Cody, when he comes back, it's him and Bray at some point, and they do that for like a whole year. But I got, this is tough because, too, like the Royal Rumble, The Rock is rumored to come back. If he's in it, he'll probably win. Rock and Roman. Cody will probably be in there. John Cena's coming back on that SmackDown, and Stone Cold. I don't think he wins a Rumble, but he's going to be a factor at WrestleMania, I think. So it's going to be interesting, but I got The Rock winning it right now if he's advertised.
I like it. I think I'm going to go with I'm gonna go with Sami Zayn to win it. Just I think there's something planned there with him. We saw the nice little haircut, and then we saw John Cena announce that he's in a tag team with Kevin Owens. Now, I don't know, like, this whole tag team stipulation, I think this might be hinting at Zayn and Owens becoming tag team champions at WrestleMania. But I really want to see Sami Zayn get his moment, because I think he really is deserving of it. He's been, like I said last week on our pod, I think he's been carrying WWE programming the last couple of months. It's like, to me, Alino, his run is like what Kofi Kingston's was from December to March before WrestleMania. He was just carrying it. Everybody cared the most about Kofi. Everybody now cares about how Usy you are and Sami Zayn. So I think Sami Zayn is deserving of it, whether or not he gets it. I think eventually Triple H, he's a Hall of Famer. He knows exactly the grind to get to the top. I think he's gonna give him an opportunity at some point, Alino. Maybe it's not at WrestleMania with The Rock coming back, but can you see that dragging maybe to SummerSlam and have Sami Zayn win the title at all? Because I think he's deserving of at least the main event title at some point.
Oh, definitely, especially what he's been able to do. Even last year with Johnny Knoxville, when they first did that, I'm like, this poor guy is going to get lost in the shuffle and he's going to be done from here. But he made it work, and that was one of the most entertaining matches at WrestleMania when they got the whole Jackass crew involved, and they had Sami Zayn really like sell for all of them. Wee Man even slammed them. So Sami Zayn came out of WrestleMania kind of like The Miz. Like, they were in not the best of situations, and they made it work, and those two guys went on from there to stay relevant. So I think Sami Zayn probably, I don't know if he'll win the title, but I think there is a main event match, probably with Roman, in the coming months leading up to Mania.
I love it. I think it's going to be fun. Quickly want to talk more about Raw, what we saw. To me, Raw was just, it was interesting because we saw this week, I'm trying to think of, so we saw Seth Rollins. He beats Bobby Lashley. He gets his title shot. What does this mean for a guy like Austin Theory? Because I see that they're really trying to build Seth Rollins as his face. Does Seth Rollins really elevate the United States title, Alino, or do you think he's more suited for that WWE title match that we've all wanted to see against Roman Reigns? Because last time we saw Seth Rollins take on Roman Reigns, he was coming out in his Shield gear, and it was last Royal Rumble, and I think we were robbed of a really good result because that just ended in DQ.
Yeah, imagine that's another swerve. Seth wins a Rumble. No one leaves late. No one's expecting it. They're all thinking Cody, The Rock, and Seth swoops in there. That would be a nice story to go with their Shield. And you can even do The Rock and Roman at some point in the future if he's not available for WrestleMania. But I think that would be another one, like off the radar type of thing. If it's not Cody, if it's not The Rock, if they don't go the Sami Zayn direction, Seth Rollins has to be at the top of that list.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And hey, on Raw, we saw Alexa Bliss look like she's trying to go Bray Wyatt again. She was going to do the Sister Abigail. And she's like, oh, wait, no, I'm good. Don't worry. Do you see Alexa Bliss winning the title and then finally revealing that she's with Bray Wyatt? Or do you think this is just another hurdle for Bianca Belair? Because I know the whole rumor, Alino, is we're going to get Bianca versus Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best direction they can go in. That's a match I think could steal the show on either night. But I think with Alexa Bliss, they're going to hint at it more and more because just the slow burn of this whole Bray Wyatt situation, maybe at WrestleMania or the night after, whenever Bray Wyatt appears, if it's on Raw or SmackDown that week, I think that's when Alexa Bliss finally joins them. So I think they're going to hint at it for the next 2-3 months before they really fully commit to her.
That's a long build, man. But hey, I want to quickly get your thoughts on Braun Strowman, because he's come back, hasn't been the most productive, hasn't really been involved too much. What are your thoughts on Braun Strowman? Because I did see Triple H, he put out a statement saying that he was a little disappointed with some of the returning stars. Do you think Braun Strowman is one of those guys? And what do you expect from Braun in the next year or two?
Yeah, when Braun first came back, that was a big deal. It was entertaining. His match with Olmos, I was not expecting it to go that good the way it did in Saudi Arabia. They actually had a really good match, but I think he should have been put with Bray Wyatt. I think they missed an opportunity there. I think Eric Rowan's another guy that they probably have in the pipeline to come back at some point with Bray, but it would have been a big deal if Braun Strowman came back with Bray Wyatt and really set the tone there. So I hope they lean towards that at some point. Like, this is just filler right now, put him back in, get the fans back behind him again, and then he finally joins with Bray again. So he's one that it has been a little disappointing. Hit Rose, another one. I thought they were like pretty entertaining before, but without Swerve Strickland, I think they unfortunately got exposed a bit that he was really the star of that group. So that's been unfortunate for them.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to talk more about the Judgment Day. You know, they've been on a tear since SummerSlam with Dominic turning heel. We see this slow build, Alino, with Dominic and Rey. Probably going to see it at WrestleMania. But what does this mean for the other people involved? We see, you know, Damian Priest, to me, is a guy that I think has so much potential. I think he could really be going for the United States title whenever he wants. Finn Balor, to me, is always going to be a potential main eventer, especially with Triple H in charge. But to me, it's all about Rhea Ripley, I think, right now. I think this is going to be a woman where she might be facing Dolph Ziggler on Raw. I would not be surprised in winning. They're just trying to build her, I think, as that China type of woman on the roster. Do you see her at some point, if it's not Charlotte, do you see it being Rhea Ripley versus Bianca at Mania?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of time for that too. Like, they can even do that like leading into next WrestleMania, like Survivor Series or Royal Rumble, if they go back to the brand versus brand thing and they split them up in a draft. But I think right now, like, they never even really picked up the whole Edge and Beth Phoenix and Rhea Ripley storyline. So it seems like they forgot about that. But maybe at the Royal Rumble, that's where it starts again. And at WrestleMania, we see Beth versus Rhea. But Dominic, he's been impressing a lot. It's a prodigy right there. I think he's finally going to come into the zone as his heel, going after his dad. Rey's going to fucking belt him at WrestleMania to end the story. But Damian Priest, I'm with you there. Like, he's like 40 years old, I think. Him and Finn, like, you can't really slow anything down with them. You got to commit to something. And if they don't, and this whole Judgment Day thing, like, doesn't make anything of it, Rhea Ripley and Dominic are the only ones that are going to benefit because they're still in their 20s. But guys that are in their 40s, like Finn and Damian Priest, it's going to probably be unfortunate for their career.
I mean, they're probably going to go the lazy approach and do like AJ and a tag team partner versus Damian and Finn at Mania, but I don't want to see that. And this is another problem, Alino, with the Usos having both belts. You could easily have Finn Balor and Damian Priest as the tag team champions right now, and I think that would just absolutely elevate Judgment Day even more. But they've been so focused on the bloodline holding everything, which, again, it's not a bad thing. They've been carrying the company for 2 years. Roman Reigns hasn't been pinned in 3 freaking years, which is absolutely absurd. But at some point in time, the wheels are going to fall off. The Usos are going to lose the titles. And there's 2 titles that they have. So what, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, if they win it, they're going to get both. I think at some point, especially if they're faces, they got to vacate one of them, give them maybe to do a tournament and have Judgment Day win them, because they're too valuable. You said it perfectly. They're both older guys that I think deserve a lot better, in WWE programs, specifically Finn Balor, who was the first ever Universal Champion. But with that being said, Alino, I think that's it for today. Talked about wrestling, talked obviously the Royal Rumble plans. I think once it gets closer to the Royal Rumble, we're going to have a hell of a preview, because there's just so many options of who can win this one. Maybe it's Goldberg. We have no idea, because he could always come back and fuck plans up. But this is In the Zone, episode 202. We talked about the World Cup that's going on tomorrow. We got Mbappe and Messi, the villain versus the hero. We talked about hockey, all the games for tonight. Guys, make sure you put out Phil Kessel and James Reimer. That's just form reliefs. And then, of course, we talk wrestling as always. So that being said, Giancarlo Alino, Chris Martelli, signing out.